Welcome back to the Something About Soccer podcast. I am Dill40K, and I am joined by my incredible co-hosts, Bizarre Brigade.
Wow, incredible. Hello, everyone.
And Pixelated Suits.
I'm just Pixelated Suits, then. No, incredible.
No, that was for both of you guys. Come on. I'm in a good mood today. I'm in a good mood today, and I'm going to get it out right away. I know this is a MLS American podcast, but as a half-Asian, we support Tottenham and our boy Youngman Son. Yeah. 17 years without a trophy. He said it today. He now considers himself a club legend, the humble kid. A humble king says something about himself. So we're just going to get that out of the way. Very happy about that. Biz is also happy because his team with another half Asian. He's had another half, a lot of half Asians at the start of the podcast.
Just for you. I know. They're performing because they knew we were podcasting today. I think it was like a group think tank and just said like today's the day, boys.
I like that. Yeah, Anthony Mikanich with a late brace in the US Open Cup for Biz's team, and then Red Bulls in a penalty shootout right now. How are you feeling about that?
I'm feeling all right. We're at home, so we should take it, but okay. You know, it's always hit or miss with penalty shootouts.
All right, well, that is the status check going into the episode. We appreciate everyone coming in and joining us for episode 9, and we're going to kick it off again like we did last week, where we got totally, I wouldn't say derailed, but we had a full-on movie podcast intro, and I really liked it. We got into socio-political controversies. You know, Jaden, what's his name? Jaden Smith would be really, really happy with it. Well, why aren't we talking about the socio-political economic?
Yeah. We're gonna get deeper. We're gonna try to solve some world policies here that are going on.
Oh, I think, wow! On the pod. Wow. Okay. All right, Biz. Are you ready to spin that wheel again?
I am, absolutely. So I was proactive and had already spun it. So
the spin is fixed.
The spin is fixed. Yep, the fix is in. But we have an interesting one out of the gate. So for Wheel of Topics, our first one of the day would be, and this is an open-ended question for both. It's kind of a would either or would you rather. Would you be more nervous personally for karaoke in front of a full stadium of people with the words of the song presented to you on a screen, just so, like for the help of that, so you don't have to worry about too many things while you're out in there with the amount of people that are watching, or improv in front of a small theater of people somewhere in the 25, 50, 100 people range?
That's not small. Pix, you want to take it first or you want me to go?
I'll go first. Okay. I think I would be more nervous about the karaoke personally.
Wow.
just because it's in front of so many people. It might be surprising to some on the show, but throughout high school and middle school, I did a little bit of theater myself.
Do a joke. Do a joke.
we're learning some things here. Pix was a theater geek. I'm all about it.
Oh, it was just like, we need some guys to fill out some of the roles. And I was like, oh.
Pixel, like in Billy Madison, where he's literally got the skull and he's doing like the William Shakespeare to be.
I wish I was that good, but no, I think I would just be so nervous to see all those people, even if I had the words in front of me. Mm-hmm. I feel like I could kind of, you know, bullshit along with the 30 people. I get one guy's attention, you know, riff off of them. But
do you have a song you would pick? What song would you pick?
Oh, I don't know.
You'd one off the top of your head. I think, like, also picking a song, like, if you were to go that route, picking a song that you feel pretty comfortable with,
yeah,
I think would also be pretty important.
Probably, I would do a Cure song because I feel like most people sing along. Probably. Okay.
That's a good call, too.
Would be a good one, you know? So it wouldn't be really me singing. It would be everybody else singing with me.
That's fair. You're doing the mic.
Yeah, exactly.
That's confidence, right? That's confidence, right? So, all right. So you're going karaoke, Pix?
Yeah,
that was the official. Okay. All right.
Well, can I ask you first, what was your most iconic role in theater? What if we look back and at the
that
legacy,
is what the people actually want to know.
I want to know. What was your best role?
Okay, yeah.
You so played a tree.
No, this is even better. We did a fairy tale characters. I was actually Prince Charming.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
Fifth grade six.
Luke. I like that.
It's emblematic of what I know of you, so that checks out.
That was my debut role.
Wow. Is that where you peaked?
Yeah. It's been downhill since then.
No, that's not what I meant. All right. For me, what would I go with? Okay, I think I hate to keep bringing up my ethnicity, but you know, as a
yeah, he's really leaning into this episode.
As a I'm really pandering. As a half Filipino, you can't not choose karaoke. That would bring shame to my entire people. Okay. So I'd go karaoke. I used to fantasize about if I ever was on American Idol, what would be my song, and it's kind of embarrassing to say now, but I think when I was younger, in my dirt biking days, I loved that, like, just like that really like surface level grungy radio rock, like Puddle of Mud, Nickelback.
Yes.
You know, so I think my song would have been you remember that song Rockstar by Nickelback?
Oh my God, yeah. Oh, give the God. People what
I,
they want.
I like, feel like I would hearing those lyrics now, I cringe, but it's still a banger. It's like
Hinder Lips of an Angel for Dill.
Yeah, exactly. people hate on it, but those songs bang.
That's my karaoke song, actually. Yeah, Hinder Lips of an Angel, no joke. I did it last time I was in Vegas, because same thing that Pixel said. It like people like that are our age, whether you like those songs or not, like mm-hmm. you just know the words inherently from just like the radio, pretty much. It's just always on.
Wow, I'm blanking out on the band because I do like them, and that one song is iconic. It, what is it? The lyrics? Why am I blanking so hard? The lyrics is like about 6 feet not being too far to fall. You know that one? That classic?
6 feet from the edge. Not, yeah, is yeah. That Creed?
Creed. That's a great one. I love that song.
Creed's iconic.
Really
that's
dark, though, honestly, karaoke. Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah, I always go back to...
If half of them aren't crying, then you're not doing something right.
Exactly.
Wow. Probably one of the most... bar for karaoke.
I would say one of the most iconic Super Bowl halftime performances of all time is Creed as well. I think that's an underrated...
Was that Super Bowl, or was it a... I thought it was like a Thanksgiving thing. Because I know you're talking about the guy that was like hanging from the
I remember he was.
It's like a giant sheet hanging down, and he's like. I showed that video every because I think it was Thanksgiving because I show it.
You're right. Yeah, 23 years ago,
dude. That video, if you have not watched that, like for anybody listening, go that's and incredible. Type in Creed Thanksgiving NFL, and you will laugh really hard. It's just Scott's. He's literally just like going so hard on the mic, and then there's just this guy who's shirtless, like flying through the air on like on a sheet, like just going like solid 30 miles an hour on the sheet in front of the stage. Like, I don't know.
That's what
it's
all about, right there.
Always makes me laugh every single time I see it. It's worth it. All right, so double karaoke's is out of the gate. Well,
I'll say one more thing too, just to you know, I didn't want Pix to one up me on the performances. he peaked it. I didn't have the courage to perform in high school, but my best role as an elementary school play, you know, theater kid was the Monkey King in The Wizard of Oz.
Ooh. The Monkey King. So, all right.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Did you do the walk and everything, like the hunched back and everything?
I did. I method acted.
Respect.
I hooted and hollered for weeks. Ate with my hands.
Lived outside for a week and a half in preparation for the role.
I picked bugs out of my dog the entire time. Yeah.
Wow, that's commitment to the bit. Honestly, I respect it.
Daniel Dill Lewis, right here. All right, I wanna hear what you would do.
Okay, so I think they actually are pretty, because I agree. I don't think like 50 to 100 is necessarily like small, but I think in comparison to a stadium, obviously that's like insanely smaller. You know, we're talking exponentially smaller than going in front of, I mean, at bare minimum 20,000 people. I would probably lean into improv solely for the fact that I think a smaller stage wouldn't be super intimidated. And more than anything, I actually think improv would be kind of a fun thing to just try one night. I really do. Like, I've always, like, I don't know about you guys, but Whose Line Is It Anyway? It was like one of my favorite shows growing up. I always thought that was so fun. I think like a lot of like my brothers in my comedy is always just kind of like when we're on a roll and it's like organic and off the cuff, a lot of the times that we're making each other laugh is just like hypothetical situations, stuff like that. You know what I mean? That just kind of just rolls out naturally, and I feel like improv is maybe a little bit of an offshoot of that. There's a little bit of a muscle memory thing, obviously, to it too. But yeah, in comparison to karaoke, dude, I would be so nervous for karaoke in front of that many people. Like, I think you just kind of do it. Like, you would be fine. And I think, like you have both said, like you pick a song that I think a lot of people could get behind, and then once you kind of get past the nervousness of actually like getting out there and doing it for like the first 10-15, then you kind of get into it. But I would still just go with improv for, I think, more of the experience than anything, but also not having to do it in front of, you know, at least 20,000 people would be would save my nerves, I think, a solid lead up. It's more the lead up to it, right? It's not necessarily even like the performance. Because once you're there, you're kind of just like, well, I'm doing it. But it's like, it's that lead up. So say you knew about it for like a week in advance and you're like, you have to think about being in front of. I'm the type of person where my anxiety is going to steer out of the way of, I have to know about me performing in front of that many people and think of the worst case scenario for that long. Like, it would not be a good thing for me.
The only thing, I say with improv is, even when you are anxious before, because I remember in school this would happen when I did presentations, that cottonmouth nervousness you get while speaking is undefeated. Undefeated. You feel like you're suffocating, and you're like, you feel like you can't create enough like spit in your mouth to talk, and you're just like. You can't speak, it's true. I hate it.
That is true. It's kind of funny too that like even just switching gears from that. Not that I like ever get nervous when I'm doing like any of my own personal content creation, but like there's something just real too about like when you're talking for a long extended period of time, like off camera and stuff like that. Like I would say I'm like a little bit more introverted. Like I'm not like this like crazy outgoing person. Kind of like, you know, I'll talk a lot if I'm passionate about something, but like realistically, I'm like kind of just relax and kind of sit and hang out with the people I care about, that kind of stuff. So the fact that like when I first started doing like Twitch and stuff like that, even it's kind of the same thing where it was just like I was shocked at with how much I was talking, like how tired I would be after streams, like the same thing, like the cotton mouth where I'm like, oh my god, dude, like my I'm like losing my voice because I'm like talking so much. Like, so there is something very true about that, whether it's nerves or just even just like if you're not used to like talking on a regular basis, like it is kind of like a muscle memory thing that you just kind of get from whether it's like for work or anything. So it's kind of an interesting, kind of something interesting you don't realize about yourself until you just start doing it. You know what I mean?
All right. Well, I guess if we ever have to do a performance, Biz intros it, warms up the crowd with some comedy. And then me and Pix hit a crazy voice style duet. And you know,
just a ballad.
That will be the first ever Something About Soccer live show in a few years. So. Do you have any quick hitter topics before we move into the main topic? Anything?
Let me see here.
Some yes, no's, some, you know, this or that. I don't know.
Let me see here. I added a couple, so let me see. Let's do this one. You want to know what I did for it, actually, which I thought was kind of good, is I typed, like, a bunch of outlandish icebreaker questions into ChatGPT, and it just cranked out the most, like, random stuff that I could possibly even imagine. So this one's kind of a random one that might require just like some thinking to actually come up with the answer, but which animal, if they could talk, do you think would be the most passive aggressive? I have a pretty straightforward answer that I think is the right answer.
Okay, you go first.
If you guys want me to go first.
You got it.
I like just with what I know about the standard pets, it could be any animal, obviously. But I think cats is the easy answer. Like, just I've lived with a couple of them. I've been allergic too, so I'm not like overly a fan of them personally. But like, just like their body language, like everything about them, those are like the most Minnesotan animals of all time. Where it's just like they are not capable of like telling you what they actually feel. They're just like they're sitting there and just thinking about disrespectful things about you, but won't ever say it. Like it's very much fits into the culture here. So it resonates with me. You guys have one?
I think that's a solid one. When you were saying common pets, that was kind of in my mind. My first thought went towards, and I don't know if I actually, you know, I'm not going to plant my flag in this.
I want to hear a random one and just justification.
I honestly think like a sloth, as chill as we might think they may be, I feel like they're so tired.
There's
all
a
the
darker
time.
Underside
like,
to a
they
sloth.
They just catch an attitude every time you kind of bother them. And it's not like overly mean because they don't have the energy to be mean to you, but it's just like every time you're interacting with them, you're just kind of bothering them. It's, you know, like you just kind of dread talking to them because they're just constantly like slightly annoyed no matter what nicely you ask them something. So I'm gonna go
I don't hate that one. Yeah. I don't hate that one.
I like that. That's a okay. Picks?
Picks, you got one?
I'm gonna go with squirrels. I feel like squirrels always have something that they need to be doing. They're, you know, they're chasing the nut, they're chasing whatever. But I feel like I am always I've do you like that with Viz?
I feel like that was just an excuse for you to use that turn of phrase.
Well, no, because one time I was on campus and I was like I would find this squirrel and I would see it literally try to pick up trash and come up next to me and try to pick stuff up for me. And I was like, dude, come on, we can coexist. You know, I'm not
going to go into your, what you're saying.
Exactly. And they were staring at me and stuff. They were staring me down. I've seen some squirrels mess with my plants and they're literally like staring, making eye contact.
Yeah. They don't care. They, at the golf courses where there's a lot, they climb, they climb all over and they're looking like you could hand, I saw a guy hand a squirrel some granola bar, like it was very intimate and sweet.
Intimate. I like just thinking that Pixel just has like a, like just like this ongoing war with the local squirrels.
Listen, the squirrels of Montclair, New Jersey are the worst squirrels in the state.
Wow.
Just three just on his windowsill, just looking in as he's doing the podcast right now, just like
they were staring me down. I think I might have a video.
Yeah. I'll have to share with you guys.
All right. Yep. I think Pix is just a little insecure because he has competition for getting to the nut.
Yeah, chasing the nut.
Yeah, chasing the nuts. All right. Well, we got a cat, a sloth, and a nut getter. Are the three episodes, the three answers there?
I think we found our title.
What MLS teams are going to get that nut? All right, let's head into the main section. We're going to be talking rivalry week, an MLS pulse check by way of some internet sleuthing, some Club World Cup transfer window stuff around the CONCACAF, and maybe some other various topics. You know, I'm introing all of it. I don't want the episode to be too long. Maybe we'll get to all of it. I don't know. Let's get into the main topic right now.
The main topic is what you came for!
Okay, we are back. MLS Weeks 12 through 14 is kind of what we'll be covering, obviously surrounding some other CONCACAF news as well. But we're going to start off with MLS Rivalry Week. Biz has laid out a topic, and we're going to speak through some of our favorite rivalries, maybe some that we don't even know about. Biz is the MLS historian here, me and Pix, the young Padawans. Biz, you want to kick this section off?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think the biggest thing for you guys, I'd be curious to know before we get in, because I will cover, you know, kind of the missing gaps. But what obviously, Pix, I think you probably have one that's pretty obvious. And Dill, you also have one that's pretty obvious because they pertain to your own personal teams. But Dill, I'll start with you. Which like actual named rivalries are you familiar with within MLS as a whole? There's 30 teams. Obviously, there's going to be rivalries amongst, you know, a subset of certain teams in certain regions for various reasons. I'll even touch on like one that pertains to the Loons that's pretty funny that I've sent to you guys. But which ones are you familiar with, Dill, outside of like obviously the most obvious one being El Tráfico with LA, the two LA squads?
I think the ones that I probably pay attention the most are still going to be more West Coast. The Portland Timbers and Seattle Sounders ones always feels very adjacent to us. It feels like, you know, the Northwest version of what El Tráfico is, and also the Galaxy and San Jose rivalry. I think that's a really good one. I think both teams have
sneaky underrated one.
Yeah, both those teams have very strong supporter sections, and I feel like that's kind of always what's drawn me to that rivalry. Yep. That's a solid one. I don't know. What is it called? Do they have a name for that one?
The Galaxy San Jose one does.
The Timber Sounders one. Does that have a name?
Oh, that's Cascadia. Yeah, Cascadia. Yep. Okay. And that one's probably, I would say, out of the bunch that we'll list here. I mean, that's got to be up there for maybe the most historic from a precedent standpoint bunch because there is USL ties to that one, which a lot of rivalries cannot say about it individually, where maybe one team does, but doesn't necessarily pertain to both being part of it, where they've been going head to head for as long as those two teams have. So there is that, which I think also props that one up. I've heard tons of discussion through a couple different pods this week about people talking about this week and, you know, ones that mean a lot to them, but that one always comes up, I think, just based on historical precedent, because MLS doesn't have a lot of that. So I think that's something that is significant for sure. But Pix, what about you? Do you have any, obviously you have your local one as well, but do you have any that stick out to you as well that you're aware of?
Yeah. So the local one being the Hudson River Derby is one that, you know, is obviously one that, you know, is one that I always look forward to, but it's always kind of felt a little bit strange in the sense that, you know, NYCFC has never really had a permanent home. So it's always like, you know, getting to where it is. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, the next coming years where NYCFC do have a permanent home And sure. It is, you know, yeah. it will feel more like that Subway Series, especially, you know, us being locked into New Jersey for a while as the Red Bulls, and NYCFC being a team that is based in you know, New York City itself. So I think that that's going to be more exciting. But in terms of, you know, MLS rivalries that really excite me, currently I really like Hell is Real. I think that, yeah. you know, throughout the years, that's gotten more and more exciting. I think that there's starting to be more and more hate between the teams, and especially just representing Ohio. So I think that it's really cool in that sense, where it's, you're kind of missing that out in the New York, New Jersey rivalry, in the sense that, like, most people from New Jersey are going to support the Red Bulls just because it's easy to go to. If you live in Queens, it's going to be easier to get to NYCFC. But, you know, Ohio is kind of just split down the middle on who you support. So I think that it's really exciting. And especially, you know, being split down a highway makes it even more so. So you get that geographical ties.
Great way to make a rivalry.
Yeah. And I one of the coolest, I think on top of it too, one of the coolest probably origin stories of like where the name comes from. And in that, I would suggest to anybody that has interest in like any of the MLS rivalry deep dives, I'm not going to sit here and like do like a full on, you know, breakdown of every single rivalry, but Hell is Real has a really cool origin story, with the actual name coming from like kind of a halfway highway marker of a sign that is in between both Columbus and Cincinnati that has been there for a long, long time. And it says Hell is Real, based on some kind of, you know, some kind of propaganda put up by one of the religious groups locally there. So that's something that is like kind of a marker of like, we're halfway traveling one way or the other, which is a really cool, genuine, like just kind of little like MLS, like personality thing, like factor that I feel like is what over time we're going to start stacking up with more and more teams coming into the league and more of these games being played. But we're starting to see like the early like results of some of those, from some of the teams that are like in the, you know, coming into the league in the last decade, where all of a sudden you're starting to see, you know, Columbus being around longer, Cincy being newer. You know, I think you're starting to see that start to pop up a little bit more organically, which is really fun.
I really love that it's just based off like this little like local thing that people see. We need to, my first thought is we need a derby. Someone needs to see, like, find a poster or old ad of like, this is your brain on drugs. So this is your brain on drugs derby. Just two melted players onto the couch playing.
Well, I'll give you kind of a goofy random example, because that naturally transitions me into the one that I was going to bring up about myself, because that also, I wanted to give you guys a question too about like what does 30 teams in a franchised league really do with how spread out geographically we are, and like, does that affect, you know, what rivalries look like with the amount of travel, all those things? Because I feel like a lot of rivalries are kind of segmented more on geography than anything, because you have to actually have exposure to the other fan base a lot of the times for it to really feel like a visceral, you know, visceral hatred and a rivalry to start to grow. But the thing that I will mention though is kind of a random side rivalry, and I would say this is more kind of like a playful rivalry. I feel like that's what Minnesota's rivalries are right now, because we are one of those teams that like is what made me kind of dawn the question on me of being so isolated, where if you look on the map of MLS teams and you put us on the map, we're the only team up in the far northern sector of the states. I mean, our rival is out in Kansas City, Missouri, and it's the rivalry is called the nicest rivalry in sports. That's literally what the rivalry is called, because it's a solid 7 to 8 hour drive for us to even get down there to attend the game. So it's like, you will have traveling fans, but
that should be the Hell is Real derby.
For the drive itself. I know, you're telling me, for somebody that's done it before. Like, but it does kind of pose the question, you know, what that means. I'll stow that away. But the other rivalry that I thought is really fun with us that just kind of came to light over this past weekend with, or 2 weekends ago with the Open Cup just starting up too, was kind of a fun little personality factoid too, that just kind of dropped a few US Open Cups ago. Whenever we play Houston, it's called the Dylan Wolpers Derby. And so the Dylan Wolpers Derby stemmed from a US Open Cup game. Normal standard US Open Cup game, nothing special, against Houston down on the road. There was, at the time, a girlfriend of Dylan Wolpers put on a happy birthday message on the US Open Cup screen. On the US Open Cup screen, it got stuck saying happy birthday, Dylan Wolpers. And based on like the production value of the US Open Cup at the time, it's evolved since now being on Paramount Plus and all of that, but it used to be like very hard to find. Like, you'd have to search random YouTube channels and stuff like that to be able to find it. the coverage just had the screen for a good 3 or 4 minutes. So people just started randomly tweeting happy birthday, Dylan Wolpers. And it became a thing where it actually became viral, and Minnesota United's social media group started to run with it and managed to keep it going. So now every time we play Houston, Dylan Wolpers always has wished a happy birthday. So it's a super funny tradition. They actually just ran a couple minute video on Minnesota United social media with both Dylan Wolpers and his now wife that are still going to Houston Dynamo games all the time. So just kind of like another thing where over time, just these random little instances that are just kind of funny instances that take place and just kind of spiral out of control into being something that is just well known by both fan bases now, which I think is really cool as well. So,
I love that.
But that brings me to the question. So kind of a long, we took the long scenic route to the actual question of, what do you guys think about having this many teams with more probably impending and coming, right? We just had San Diego come into the league this go around. It's probably at least going to get to 32. I think that's for now going to be the magic number of having 16 on both conference sides, I think, is just kind of the way with the playoffs and how they're formatted right now makes the most sense, right? So in the short term and the long term, how do we feel, and Pix, I'll start with you on this one. How do we feel about all of this rivalry talk for this week and how it pertains to that instance with that many teams, the geographical, you know, kind of the geographical oddities that we have with trying to kind of spread the population out with, you know, fan bases and having some on the east, some on the west, and then some people just kind of being isolated all over. What do you think that does? Is there good from it? Is there bad? Are you somewhere in the middle? Where do you stand?
I think it's somewhere on the middle, because I kind of alluded to it before where I was saying, you know, I'm obviously, as a Red Bulls fan, I look forward to the Hudson River Derby, but it's always missing something in the sense that, you know, this is a team that, you know, came about in, you know, the very early 2010s in NYCFC. And all MLS marketing was like, hey, you guys have to hate this team. You guys are forced to hate this team. And it, you know, I'm not sure if, I think the MLS hasn't done that so much with, you know, the Galaxy and San Diego, but it just, it didn't really feel like a real rivalry in a sense. We're just like, this is a team that we're just plopping here. And, you know, there doesn't feel like the rivalries that had existed with us matching up against the past and against DC United or even against the Revolution. So it's just like those historic battles that you have, you know, you, for these teams to actually have rivalries, you can't just have, you know, attribute these derby names onto them and just have these marketing around them. I think that one of the biggest things is that you have to have games with stakes on them. Just like you mentioned, I don't know if that game of Minnesota versus Houston would have been as important if it wasn't a U.S. Open Cup game where, you know, someone is getting eliminated. Because, like, you know, ultimately, we lost on the road against NYCFC. And I'm like, hey, we're going to lose on the road against another team. Like, it doesn't really matter that much that it's against NYCFC. Unless it's a playoff game or if it's a game, you know, once you're actually competing for the MLS Cup. And that's when you start getting the rivalries. So I feel like the more games with stakes, and that's kind of why I kind of agree with, not so much with having three games in the playoffs, but having, you know, more teams enter the playoffs, especially if we advanced and we grow to have a lot more teams. I think that the more teams that get into those playoffs and the more teams that are eliminating each other, that's how you start getting people
hitting
each other.
That's,
you know,
a great
like
point.
I think that, you know, the beef between Miami and Atlanta showed itself last year. And I think that that's awesome. Yep. I love that. Like, you start to see some butting heads, but it's only when there's stakes on the line. And that's one of the issues that we have when we're, you know, we run, you know, we have a league, but then we have playoffs at the end. So it's like there's not too much on the line when you have so many games. And those games are only, you know, 3 points. And especially with, you know, how hard it is to be on the road, I think, you know, the Red Bulls, I'm pretty sure, still haven't won on the road. So as soon as I saw that we were on the road, especially playing in, you know, NYCFC Stadium and in Yankees or City Field in a baseball stadium, like, I kind of already had chalked that off. But if it had been for a playoff, I know that, you know, it's both a rivalry and that, you know, we could get eliminated here. We're not just, you know, losing 0 points, we're also losing our dignity. So I think that, I don't know, I just think that, like, the playoffs have so much more for them. And I think that that's where rivalries are made. And I don't think that you need geography so much for that. Because one of the big things is, like, if I wear a Red Bulls kit outside and walk around New York, no one's going to tell me anything. Like, no NYCFC fan is going to, you know, hurl an insult at me. And, you know, but if we were to knock someone out and I was, you know, an away fan visiting, you know, let's say Atlanta, we knock out Atlanta or something, I'll definitely get, you know, a herd of insults thrown at me. So I think that it's just more about the stakes. And I think that, you know, the more stakes that we bring, I think even with League's Cup, you know, there's, you know, some issues that I have with it. But the fact that it just means that there's teams that are competing against each other and teams that are getting left out as a result, not only creates rivalries in the MLS, but it also creates rivalries and storylines in Liga MX. So long-winded answer, and I covered a lot of points. But
I think that's I think you hit the nail on the head, and I think those are some great points, because it's funny that you brought up League's Cup. That was actually where I was going to go next and kind of use that as an example as well. So yeah, you know, you covered it. Well said. Dill, do you have anything to add for yourself too? I think Pixel covered a fair portion of it, like in the best way, because I agree with everything you said. But do you have anything of your own to add? Otherwise we can move along to some MLS Reddit thread if not.
Yeah, honestly, I think I completely agree with what Pix says, especially the part where, you know, if he wears a Red Bulls jersey around me, I'm going to tell him that his Prince Charming performance was terrible. So, yeah, I completely agree. I think that I think one of the most compelling rivalries of American sports is NBA, because of the NBA playoffs and how many games they play against one another. That volume of games in a short amount of time, whether that be a few years, you know, one series, two-legged maybe for, you know, MLS. I think that really creates rivalries, and, you know, unless they're really close, you know, distance-wise, you know, I think the best ones in terms of where you can feel it the most is like the El Traficos, like the New York ones. I feel like you struggle with the Minnesota-style ones. And one league that I feel like, you know, it's still in early days, and I think there definitely feels like rivalries can pop up quicker is a league like the CPL with such a few amount of teams, eight, if I remember correctly, and they all play each other four times each season. So that is a ton of way to make quick history of each team, and it feels like there's a storyline between each of the matchups when you play each team four times. So yeah, that's kind of where my mind's at. So if you want to take us to the cesspool of Reddit, take us there, the MLS pulse check.
Yeah, so this is something new that we're gonna throw against the wall and see how it works. But I do think that there's some validity to this, with trying to get trying to get our finger on the pulse of understanding where current fan bases are. And I think this week specifically, I wanted to focus on two teams that have really underachieved this year, and just really try to understand and get a little bit more context as to what the fan base is thinking, because there's been some things that have been swirling around about both. So right now, the two specific teams we're going to target are one from the West and one from the East. We're going to start with St. Louis City, who is actually a team that I'm very familiar with now, just based on a scheduling oddity with the US Open Cup draw. We actually drew them middle of the week this week and just finished up a game with them just now, right before we were done recording, beating them 3-2. And then over the weekend, we played our full first team in a regular season game against them. So played them back-to-back games and beat them 3-0 over the weekend. So with that happening, after the 3-0 loss on the weekend, there was a report from Swedish media, because their coach Olof Mellberg was brought over from, if I remember correctly, I know he is Swedish. I think it was also the Swedish league that he came from. I'd have to fact check myself on it. So Dill, I appreciate that. But regardless, came over from Europe and has struggled mightily in his time here. I think on top of it too, the biggest thing to remember about St. Louis City, for those that might not know the whole story, that's one of the newest teams in the MLS. It's a team that is also got off to a pretty impressive start out of the gate, outside of maybe Atlanta United, probably the best start we had seen from an expansion side to date, where they actually won the Supporter Shield, or actually won the West. I don't remember if they won the Supporter Shield, but won the West in their opening expansion season, which was incredibly impressive. But since then, it has been nothing but, honestly, kind of growing pains since then. It's they made Champions League in their first season from that, so kind of crashed out of there. And then from there, they also let go Bradley Carnell, who is now thriving at Philadelphia Union. So kicking themselves over that, with kind of a rough patch to start the season last year. Brought in interim John Hackworth, who's now still involved with the team, but now they are having him kind of pull the strings upstairs, and Olof Mellberg was brought in to kind of like smooth things over and alleviate some of these growing pains, and he's done anything but. I mean, the team is in probably as dire of straits as we've seen since they've been in the league. So Pix, did you have a couple from St. Louis, or was the couple that you printed out on there.
Yeah, yeah, I did.
Do you want to take over a couple different thoughts just on what you saw on Reddit, and we can just kind of go from there on?
Some of the things that I was saying throughout, you know, a few of the match threads, it just seems that there isn't a lot of direction. I think that you had mentioned some things about some comments with the sporting director, and there's a lot of fingers being pointed on, not just, you know, on kind of the change of how the team has looked throughout the years. I think that there was a very clear mind coming from the fans, like a clear game plan, a clear sort of set plan of how they want to play. You know, their super, you know, counterattacking style, where they don't really have that anymore. And they're building so much more on defensive solidity. But a lot of the fans feel really frustrated with the fact that, you know, they have that defensive stability, you know, in the early part of the season. But a lot of fans were even highlighting that there's like maybe only two or three other teams that have scored as few goals as they have. So it's just, there really isn't any attacking output to match with the defensive stalwartness, where it's like you can't be in the MLS and be, you know, trying to get 0-0 draws every single week. So that's one of the biggest frustrations, where it's like so many of the fans of the comments that I was reading on is just, you know, one of them says that their identity has been erased, that they're a shell of the team with no direction.
God.
And especially highlighting like how good St. Louis used to be to watch. It's not a team that I know very well, but it's, I remember those early seasons where, you know, you would put a St. Louis game and it's like, holy crap, an expansion team is not only playing this good, but also playing in such a identifiable style.
Yeah.
And that's lost, where it's like, there is a style that you can see in St. Louis, but it's a very bad style. You know,
you can see it in Philly.
Exactly. Yeah.
that's the issue.
If you want to see the style that existed, if you want to see the St. Louis of 2 years ago, then just, you know, flip on the channel and watch the Union.
Yep, exactly. No, well said. But yeah, the biggest things, and I actually wanted to read a couple of things that I had pulled up here too. So there was a quote that I saw Bogert tweet, because Lutz Fahnensteel, the sporting director for St. Louis, I've referenced him a couple times on the podcast, and the thing about him was that he was linked early on, so came over from Hoffenheim. He was kind of the key contributor to a lot of Hoffenheim success early on there. I know he was linked with Roberto Firmino at one point coming over from the MLS before Firmino did the Saudi move, with Fahnensteel being the person that was one of the key cogs to getting him over to Germany in the first place. So had a lot of weight and pull. You can also see the fingerprint still on the team. I was actually pointing out to my girlfriend when we were watching the game, all of the different German names from Fahnensteel being so important in player recruitment over here, with Joao Klaus and Thomas Hartl and Baumgartl, just so many different people that are still a part of the team that at one point were key contributors, but or are relatively new, that they were hoping that we're going to be contributors. And it's kind of fallen flat. So the quote that Fahnensteel said over the radio that Boger tweeted was, "I'm not a robot. Even though I'm German, I'm still a human being." And the context to that was about trading away. So he was being asked about trading away Tim Parker, who was actually featured pretty heavily in that MLS documentary that came out just to start this year, about kind of, and St. Louis was kind of one of the bigger episodes. They went over the Sporting Kansas City St. Louis rivalry pretty heavily. And Tim Parker was pretty much the main character of that episode, just kind of like followed him around from A to B within the rivalry. I think in that episode too, it features him actually being traded away too. So you kind of see when that happens in the process of it.
Like Hard Knocks.
It's what they were going for a little bit. The context of it, Fahnensteel says trading away Parker, who was a leader for the club on and off the pitch, was a tough decision. It's part of the professional sports business that you have to let people go who are brilliant and let people who played a big part in the short history of the club. It was definitely very emotional for everybody. And then he said, "I'm not a robot. Even though I'm German, I'm still a human being." So that's kind of where we're at. I know they've mentioned, I've seen reports that there could be shakeups as of Monday. Bless you. I've seen reports that there could be shakeups as early as Monday. Melberg, it came out this week. Bogert actually reported that Melberg was still safe for now. But I've seen reports that he could be gone Monday. It sounds like they're going to shake up some of the front office as well. So who knows? It remains to be seen. But I've also seen some fans calling for like boycotts of going to games and no longer trying to sell out. Like it's gotten to that point. So I think, very interesting in terms of where we're at for a team that is in its infancy still within the MLS. It's kind of sad to see that had so much hype and is still, like, I think a hotbed for soccer in the country, too. It's probably like the Midwestern hub of soccer.
They hit the ground running, too, so it's like a hard reset early on.
Yeah.
The journey is kind of hard.
Yeah, doing that with the sporting director and another coach, where you're doing like a full stylistic shift, it feels a little off kilter at this point already, especially when you're, I mean, they're going to, if they get rid of Melberg, you'd be on your fourth coach technically if you count the interim. So that's no way to run a franchise if you're, you know, if you're just not even three years in, it means it's not going very well. But that brings us to another team that I think is also incredibly interesting. It's the Eastern Conference side of things with Atlanta United, who was a team that we have hyped up a ton on this show. And I think with the amount of investment that they've made into this team, I think it's understandable as to why. I mean, bringing back Miguel Almiron, bringing in the transfer record at the time. And I actually, that might've been after Denki. So I think that is the transfer record with Emmanuel Latte-Loth.
You're correct.
And then last year, bring in Marinchuk, who has just been, I mean, just not been it, man, which is kind of unfortunate to see. But there's just something clearly wrong. And I don't know, to be completely frank, I have not watched enough Atlanta United to truly be able to diagnose it myself and have maybe a little bit more of an observant take, but that's kind of why I included them on this too. So Pix, do you want to lead us off too with what you're seeing? Cause I read through a couple of years and there's some good tidbits in there on what you were able to find with some of the deep dives and some of the Atlanta United faithful.
Yeah. So one of the big things is just that the team really isn't playing as a team. There's been a lot of people even talking about, I saw one fan commenting about, you know, attending as season ticket holders, a lot of times you can have access to open practices and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they were mentioning how like the players themselves weren't even talking amongst each other at practice. Oof. So it's like, if people aren't talking amongst each other at practice, like think about how it looks like at the locker room, think about how it looks like on the field itself. So one of the big things that Atlanta had early on, especially like when they were really good in, you know, the late 2010s, is that they really had an identity, you know, including Almiron, including Martinez, where they had a really good sect of, you know, they have a good sect of players, but especially players coming from the same background of all being South Central American, which isn't necessarily the point. I don't think that you need to build a squad with a, you know, geographic thing in mind. I just think that, you know, having that chemistry and forcing that chemistry to exist is very helpful, especially when you're coming from, you know, a team that you need that chemistry to be able to, you know, be on the road for so long. And if you're really not talking amongst each other, then there's a lot more problems. There's a lot of fans that have said that there really isn't passion from a lot of the players. There isn't any drive. And, you know, it just, once you're at that point, it's, what can a manager do besides, you know, I mean, you can't really fix, like, there's no tactics to fix if the players aren't giving it their 100%. So yeah, there's been a lot of calls of, you know, a lot of season ticket holders not going to any, you know, any more games with the result. I think that, you know, there's, with the amount of money that they spent, it's super surprising. Yeah. I was saying, you know, that Atlanta were going to finish third or fourth.
They were a popular top three spot in the East, right? Yeah, very fashionable, trendy pick.
I was also super excited for Marinchuk because I'd seen him, you know, at Atlanta for so long, and I knew what he could do. And I thought that, you know, Latte-Loth was exactly what was needed to be able to feed him. But, you know, there hasn't been that. And a lot of people are blaming and pointing fingers at so many different things. But I think that the attitude is probably one of the biggest. I think that people have been, you know, questioning the tactics. Some people have been questioning the midfield. Some people have been, you know, questioning individual players, like you have said in Mirenchuk. But I think overall, you know, there's kind of a desire. And I think that, you know, not to, to put a damper on it, but I think that in the same way that, you know, when you watch Galaxy and there isn't, you know, that much of a drive, I'm not trying to throw any stones.
He prefaced it. It's, you know, it's fine.
And even with the Red Bulls too, sometimes when we're on the road, you know, there isn't that much of a drive. So just like, once you have that and it's not for just one game or one half, once it's being something that's consistent for, you know, two, three games, and you start collecting that string of complacency, it's super dangerous, especially with how much money they've spent. So I really have no idea what the solution is there.
I do want to bring something up because I kind of looked into it a little bit too, and I found this interesting article that I actually just posted yesterday. So it is a it's an Atlanta United fan opinion piece on the blog website called Scarves and Spikes, which is an Atlanta United specific.
I'm familiar. Website. I think I follow their Twitter page actually.
Oh, nice. So yeah. I came across this interesting article, Wrecked the Match, the Matches That Broke Atlanta United. And I'll quote the first paragraph of this. It's written by Chris Levine, and he says it very eloquently. I like this. Ever have a wave of deja vu come over you, that feeling of I've seen this before, and yet you can't quite place where or when? Somehow this year's Atlanta United season is forming an eerie parallel to the last one. A hopeful end to the prior year, a consensus top-scoring attack, and a promising start to the campaign, all familiar ingredients. But both seasons took a sudden and somewhat unexpected turn at nearly the exact same point in the schedule. Different managers and different star players, yet a similar pivot point. A home match that sent the team and its fans into uncharted territory. So if you do read this article, he talks about how going into each of the seasons, they had an exciting offseason. They doubled down even further in this season, and he kind of put in air quotes, you know, in hindsight, as they're doing bad, it's like it kind of seems silly to say they won the offseason because, you know, they spent so much money. But, you know, he does talk about that lack of drive, you know, a very vaunted attack that seems to sputter. And the games that he's speaking about are games where they had a lead comfortably and let it get away from them, and then they just lose momentum. And, you know, at the end, he kind of talks about how this is a big inflection point. It doesn't mean the season's over, but they're going into a six-match road trip in this portion of the season. So it's a very interesting article. So if you guys want to check that out, only it says here it's an 8-minute read. You know, I assume that's the average reading level. You might be able to read it faster, but it's a very interesting piece. And I do love the the fan opinion pieces, and this whole thing that we kind of spoke about kind of just reminded me of that. And it's nice to find new resources like that. So very interesting. Yeah. It's an interesting parallel of two seasons. And I do remember Atlanta United like feeling like they were so good because, you know, they're a team that you feel like is a scary team. And then you kind of see some of their results, and you're like, what's going on? The team's very underwhelming.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. I think, like, the biggest thing with Atlanta, too, is I think maybe a little bit of I mean, they can almost be, like, kind of a microcosm of what's going on with a lot of the big spenders in the league right now that are struggling with – you know, we're seeing it with Miami all of a sudden, where the roster rules, I think, are impeding the ability for some of these bigger teams to be able to fully build out a roster build – to their liking, because all of their big money spends are being prioritized in the attack. And you're seeing a lot of the times where all of that money that is being spent over, maybe some other pieces of the roster are being either cut or cut out or just completely like omitted, or just like maybe even like there's no foresight on even including certain portions of it. I think Miami is like super guilty of that right now. But especially with getting rid and trading away a lot of their like role player pieces. But Atlanta, not to say that they've necessarily done that in spades or as much, but I think there is, anytime that you watch Atlanta, you can definitely see, because I watched them much earlier in the year where it wasn't necessarily going super sideways yet. It was just kind of like maybe mediocre, some late game, but that's kind of been their MO since the beginning. There's been a lot of high scoring games, and it's no secret that I think the midfield seems to be more geared towards trying to recycle possession and attack. And then you look at a lot of times when they get stuck out in or caught in transition, it's every goal that I see for Atlanta United in a highlight is always them just like chasing after a transition opportunity and them getting absolutely dusted in transition. And I feel like it's a parallel to a lot of the other high spending teams. And that's just because of I think where a lot of teams are gearing their attack in MLS. I think Dill, with your guys' strategy last year with Puj and the two fastest attackers you could possibly find in Peck and Painsill, like you guys literally won the league in that capacity. The Loons this year with my team, they're, you know, sitting back and really trying to kind of do the antithesis of what the league is with absorbing and then like really gearing into the full transition attack is like our primary attacking strategy. So it's like you're starting to see some teams maybe try to like find other ways to get around it, but there's a there's a habit with some of these bigger spending teams that have the luxury to be able to spend when you have an owner like Arthur Blank that comes out and is willing. I already saw an article too, speaking of last year, that Thiago Almada is being linked back to the team now all of a sudden, even despite a really good year over in Europe. And well, I won't say really good year, but like a year that like I think should probably keep him there and, you know, maybe gear him to go forward. And I'm seeing him linked back with, you know, a couple different opportunities, like with maybe going back to Botafogo for Club World Cup or coming here. And it's just like, I think that's all probably being driven by either agent or, you know, maybe even Atlanta United just hoping and praying just to try to, you know, maybe stoke a fire under the fan base, hoping that they have that opportunity to have him back. But it's like that's, I think, kind of where we're at right now with Atlanta. It's just like really just like rumors trying to stir that maybe the next attacking player will be the thing that's their saving grace. And it's like, I think some of these teams need to take a step back and understand that it's okay to maybe even like bring in like a really solid, expensive defensive midfielder that's going to help you, you know, maybe snuff out some of those attacks, or bring in a center back that's like, you know, that you can pay over the senior international roster salary. And like, no, so it's okay to do it.
Bringing in like 34-year-old center backs, please.
Yeah, yeah. Dill knows better than anybody with Mayo Yoshida's skeletal remains out there in LA. That poor guy.
Let Jalen Neal leave and then sign a 34-year-old veteran. I hate it.
I've watched a couple of those highlights, and Maya Yoshida is like, bro, I am not having a good time right now. Like, this is not a fun time. Should not have come back. Should have left. Should have rode out in the sunset off the cup win. That was a mistake. But yeah, so I think like bar none with MLS Pulse and kind of where we're going with that, I think that will be kind of a section that we highlight going forward with things just like that, where we'll just kind of pick a theme for the week, figure out what we want to do, whether it's, you know, maybe teams struggling or teams that are, you know, on the up and up, or during transfer time, maybe try to get some transfer rumors that like are kind of being circulated amongst the fan base. So I think it's kind of a fun way. And I feel like it also helps us that maybe with the leagues being a little less staggered as the league season starts to go and you don't catch as many games like full length, it's also a good way to kind of understand what's going on with the teams as you go too. Cause just even reading a couple comments, I felt like I'm back into understanding like kind of how the fan bases both feel. Granted, there's some pessimistic comments that are being said right now, understandably with how both teams are performing, but it does make you kind of understand, you know, the other side of it, of like what, you know, what the fan base currently feels with those results. So it's like, that's the other side of it. You just see it in the standings. You don't really know what, you know, how is that affecting the people that actually have to watch it every week? Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, so
that's a good point. All right. Well, I enjoyed that first not attempt. It was more than an attempt. We did it. Our first MLS, exactly. Our first MLS Pulse section. I think what we'll do before we get into the grab bag, we have the around the CONCACAF section that we'd like to do. We're going to hit a little on Liga MX, some CPL. I see some Costa Rican news in there, but I'd also like to talk about a few things just big picture in terms of the MLS for our fans, maybe international, who aren't always pay attention to the league table. As of 14 games, Philadelphia Union are top of both the Western and Eastern Conference on 29 points, with Cincinnati right behind them, only down, you know, in second place due to goal difference. Vancouver Whitecaps, I feel like the sweethearts of this podcast a little bit. You know, Brian White, great guy. Minnesota United sitting in the second in Western Conference, fifth overall. And then the Columbus Crew, obviously a great team, well-coached, third place.
Unbelievable.
Three things are certain: death, taxes, and Columbus Crew being a solid team year in, year out. On the
only one loss, too, pointing it out, similar to Vancouver. Like, that in itself is insane, too.
That
it's
is really
a lot
crazy.
Of draws, but that is bananas.
But we are going to go around the CONCACAF update. And we do have, Biz, I do want to say one thing. I saw do have some U.S. men's national team stuff. I would love to talk about that a little bit in the grab bag with some stuff for abroad.
For sure.
I think that's a really good conversation. But let's start it off, the Liga MX Clausura recap. Which one of you guys wanted to talk about that?
You want to lead it off, picks? I know I wrote it down, but have you been kind of paying attention?
Paying a little bit of attention. Yeah, so it's going to be Club America versus Toluca in the final. I was watching a little bit of Club America versus Cruz Azul beforehand. And then it was Toluca versus who to go through? I think it was
Tigres,
right?
Tigres.
Yeah, so it's going to be exciting. I was definitely rooting for Cruz Azul because they have one of my favorite goalkeepers. but either way, Club America, one of the biggest teams in Mexico.
They're inevitable.
And, you know, they're kind of like the Real Madrid of Mexico. versus Toluca, which is going to be really interesting because Toluca was first in the regular season, and they've actually been very surprising. So
yeah,
I'm going to be really interested in tuning into that, and I'm probably going to be rooting towards Toluca too.
And if I'm not mistaken, Club America has, like, they've won the title now, both Aperture and Clase Era, like, three straight times now. So this would be number four, where they've won Apertura, Clase Era, Aperture, and then they'd be going for a fourth consecutive. So pretty much winning two full calendar seasons in a row with the season splits if they win this, which I heard during the broadcast, and I was like, that's true? That's insane. So, yeah, when we've been talking about, like, me and Pix were saying before we even went live, like, we were just kind of talking about how they just keep finding a way to do it. And it just, it seems, even with like the Club World Cup stuff that we might hit on here in a half second, like they're even potentially going to back on their way into there based on some of their successes, just like, you know, in the field of Liga MX and how successful they've been. So it's just that team, you know, is a big time, it's a cash cow down there, man. They just print money and they keep finding ways to be successful. And it just, the other thing too, that did we talk about this last time too? I feel like we had, what, maybe it was off the podcast, but how Liga MX actually determines their playoff winners was, obviously it's a two-legged fixture. They play a home and home, but then there is no away goals. They do it based on the seeding. So if you're a higher seed, you just go through if you're tied, is how they do it down there. So that's how they've gotten through. And that was something I didn't realize until I think I started playing Football Manager and did a Liga MX season through. But I think that, like, that is kind of a unique, I don't know if there's probably other places in the world that do it. I'm not familiar with any others that do it that way, but I don't know. Did we discuss what we think about that, or am I just like making that up in my head?
I think we discussed another part of the playoff. Okay. I think we discussed the playoff format where it's, you have like the, like a little bit of life left, where we discussed the playoff format and like beforehand where it's one goes against four, and then you guys can even have a little bit of
that's right left. That's right. Okay,
but speaking a little bit on, you know, that thing in the Colombian playoff system, we have it so if you become first, you have one extra point, and it's only if you're the team in first. If you're second, that gives you no advantage. It's only for the first place winner, which I do agree with in the sense that, like, there should be an advantage of coming in so first.
Explain that a little bit. Like, a point, like, as in, like, a tally point for, like, because you're playing multiple games where you're...
Right. So the way that it works is that you have, stuff like that. Yeah, you have, you have eight teams, and then they split into groups of four. And then let's say one and two in that group of four get tied, then it would just go to the team who, if they were first in the regular season, it would just go to them without my goal difference or anything like that. I think that is a good way, but I don't think that, you know, especially with, you know, teams like Club America becoming so dominant, I don't think that, you know, making it so that it's seeded that way where it's not just the winner, because then Toluca would have gone through. Obviously, it was on the other side of the bracket, but it would have been only Toluca.
That brings us kind of naturally into the next bullet point that's listed there of the news that broke. Was it today or yesterday that I sent you guys that in I think it was yesterday, but regardless, it broke within the last 24 hours that teams from the second division in Mexico that has been boxed out of the top division now for how long has that been, Pick? Since, like, I know we've talked about it because
I think it was maybe during COVID that it
during
started.
COVID,
it might have been even earlier than that.
I did not do a full breakdown too as to why it stopped, but I am assuming, just educated guess, that was COVID related as well, just kind of like freezing the leagues, which would make sense just based on, like, some of the finances that would be involved with that. While Pix looks that up, the whole story of what's going on with that is the fact that there is a potential that promotion and relegation is coming back, and the 10 teams from the second division have sued for that to happen even sooner within the next calendar season. They're just like, every time they'll come up, they'll just like kick them back down there, like, stay down. But I do think that is a really interesting development of an extra little piece with even just like things within kind of the world of CONCACAF, because if that comes back, I think that is a really interesting wrinkle with it being kind of, I mean, one of the top three leagues here in terms of quality, all of a sudden having teams that are cycling in and out having some of those teams that are synonymous now with Leagues Cup being a thing, with us getting maybe used to those, you know, certain finite set of teams that have been there since the start of this Leagues Cup, you're gonna start having teams cycled through. What does promotion and relegation look like too? Because now you're gonna have to wrestle with that if you do allow it, where, you know, are you changing the format of what it was? Is it new? So there's a lot of questions that got to be answered with that, and whether or not it's even adopted, because now it's one of those things too where the Federation has control over that as well. And there's going to be, you're going to have to kind of go to war for, you know, you as the second division are going to have to try to kind of keep an idea on what you want your principles and ideology to look like for the league itself, and try to, you know, lobby for yourself as maybe the kind of the redheaded stepchild that like has to try to find a way to make its way back into the fold of things now. So I think it's a really interesting discussion, and something that, I mean, it can really change a lot. If you're bringing three new teams up every year, if you're bringing just one, I don't really know what it looks like. So I don't know. Do you guys have anything that really strike or resonates with you from that?
Yeah. Well, I was just going to add, Argentina did the same thing, not for as long, because I just searched it up and it was originally planned from 2020 until 2026, but I'm not sure if that's the original time period, because I'm pretty sure they had voted to extend it. Okay. But Argentina had also done the same thing where they had banned relegation. I think last year it was.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was last year. But I think that 6 years without any promotion relegation, with the idea of bringing it back, like, you're just killing the second division. And I've seen throughout the years where the second division was trying to like attach itself to something else. They're even trying to find CONIFA stuff outside to attach itself in. And it's just like, one of the issues with Mexican soccer is there's been so many teams that have come and gone. One of the most famous ones is Veracruz, which was the team with the cool shark on the badge. And it's like, dude, like,
Pixel's a sucker for a good shark on a kid.
I love, dude. I'm a big fan of, if you have a good badge, I'm going to support your team. And that's why they're memorable. But yeah, so it's just like those teams aren't going to be able to really thrive. And it's like those teams in the second division, I don't even know how they've been able to, you know, stay afloat financially. So it's going to be really interesting to see what the league will look like when they open it up, and how the competitive will be, and even like how the second division is going to compare to, you know, our second division in the US with the USL. So I would actually even be super down. I obviously would be, you know, a financial planning disaster, but USL versus, you know,
I was just gonna say, what do we think? Because I've seen that as a rumor that people have already kind of thrown out with the Leagues Cup idea, and with promotion and relegation coming into USL. What would be the thoughts on that if like the second division either attached itself to the league itself, or just like flat, like did like their own kind of cup competition with that too? Like, what? Right. It would make things really
more content.
Yeah, for sure.
But one of the biggest things is that there's so many, you know, regions, just like in the US, a lot of regions in Mexico that are kind of left out of having soccer teams, just because they're not, you know, the bigger metropolitan areas where you're going to get money in. So
sure.
I think one of the biggest advantages about Liga MX 2 or Liga MX B or whatever you want to call it, I think it's even called Asunción or something like that, is the idea of having these local teams where, you know, you can see these USL teams with so much passion, and you take away the corporatism that exists. You'll see that too in the Liga MX, you know, sides that are in the second division. So I think, you know, whatever pathway, I'm excited to see what it is, and the sooner the better, I think, because, you know, 6 years, if they just keep putting it forward and punting the ball back, I think it's just going to be worse for, you know, the development of soccer in Mexico, which is already kind of tumbling as it is. And I think that having a strong enough second division where you can, you know, have grassroots development is just going to be better for this sport. So
yeah, definitely
the faster, the better.
All right, well, we will have to see. Definitely an interesting question posed by the second division. And, you know, if it got paused because of COVID and they're waiting this long, they're doing them really dirty down there. So we'll move up. We'll go a little north quickly. The CPL, record-breaking attendance game between league leaders Atletico Ottawa, who are just dogging the CPL right now. 22 goal difference. Incredible, incredible player that I'm familiar with. We're all familiar with a lot of the Canadian Premier League players from our time in Football Manager there. Noah Abbotnay made the move from York to Ottawa, and he's one of their best players, a defender. But they played against Forge FC, who in the table right now are, let me double check.
I think they're like fourth, but they are like close to undefeated. Forge is like borderline. I think they only have like one loss, but they've like drawn a ton or something.
They're seven
like that
games into the season.
I last looked.
Yeah. So still early days, but like we mentioned earlier in the episodes, like these teams play each other four times a year.
Yep.
The league is growing. They do want to expand. I know there's two areas they want to expand to. I can't remember right off the top of my head, but I do know people have also said that some of the other, like some of the clubs are struggling financially, you know, some of the lower clubs. So it's kind of in that weird zone where it's like, do teams that come in just replace some of the teams that maybe want to get out and maybe become, you know, less of a professional organization? It's hard to say, but it's been a very exciting CPL. It's an interesting system where the top five teams make the playoffs, fourth and fifth play this little play-in game. Only three teams don't make the playoffs, so it's much like the MLS where a high percentage of teams do make it. But no, it's cool to see that attendance record did get broken, and it was
17,971.
And that was at for a Forge home game in Hamilton, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. Yeah. So really cool things to see there. CPL has a sweet spot in my heart, and if we move even further down south, we go north, we go back south. Costa Rican Clausura comes down to Alajuelense and Saprissa. They're actually
pretty
playing
solid. Solid pronunciation.
Thank you. They're playing that game right now, if I'm not
they
mistaken.
They are. They're in the 60th minute, 0-0. It was 3-3 on aggregate going into this.
Yeah.
So yep. So this one is still going. The reason I featured this too was there was a unique team that had potential to maybe sneak into it, but it ended up just being kind of the normal the normal powerhouses of the Costa Rican league. So I was a little bummed about that, but there was a team that actually in the Clausura, there was a team named Punta Arenas FC, which Pix would love them. They have a shark on the logo, so he'd be all in. But we did a little bit of research. They actually finished on 41 points in totality, which was good enough for third place and just 2 points behind the top team, Herediano. So pretty impressive run. I had looked and they had only made the Champions League in their history. And I think if I remember right too, I think it was even under a different name because they've changed names a couple times just based on ownership and stuff. So not a very storied franchise that has made its way into the top division that had a chance at really doing something in the Clausura. So I was bummed to see that they didn't. I have tried and looked to see like how you make the Central American Cup through Costa Rica. And I've like gone through some like hardcore, like looks of like rules and stuff like that. I have not been able to figure out, like, there's not an eloquent and concise guide to it, like just by a couple of Google searches. So I just gave up and I'm like, well, I'll just see if they're there for finishing third in the Clausura in a couple months and we'll feature them then. But yeah, it's, I know Central American Cup, they just actually announced that. And that's, I think, going to start in July. So that will be like a lot of the other leagues that we might not talk about as much. But those would be the other pathways for teams from Honduras, Guatemala, Jamaica, you know, a lot of those, well, Central America will be all the smaller, like, you know, like Honduras, Guatemala, those teams. And then you'll also have the Caribbean Cup where Jamaica and some of the island Caribbean nations will also have their pathways in. So those are the ways for those teams based on league performance. They kind of then go into this next cup competition. And then from there, they try to catapult into Champions Cup. So they kind of have to do like, I would say like equate it to, for Europe, kind of like the qualifying rounds of like, you know, the Champions League, Conference League, Europa League, kind of a similar fashion, but they do it more in like a league phase style. Just as, because there are more, I feel like more leagues and trying to figure out maybe just like the criteria of the coefficients and stuff is probably a little more convoluted over here than it is where there's more, I think, data and sample size for some of these European nations over time. So but yeah, so fascinating and was something I was hoping that we could see, but no, it's pretty straightforward and boring. Sadly, it's Saprissa and Alajuelense who are just like the two powerhouses in Costa Rica. So they'll be there. They will be there, sadly, but we'll keep tabs on that one.
All right. Well, that is your Around the CONCACAF update. We have some Club World Cup transfer stuff, but I think we're going to talk about that a little bit in the grab bag. I have a kind of big grab bag about U.S. men's national team things abroad, and Club World Cup is, you know, it's abroad adjacent. It's happening in the U.S., but a lot of, you know, international teams are coming over. So let's get into the grab bag. We'll cover a few things, and we'll see you in just 1 second. It's the grab bag.
Let me reach into that bag.
All right, I've reached into the bag, and we have two main things to talk about. Pix and Biz are first going to recollect, enjoy their real-life experiences of some games that they went to. Let's get the bad one out of the way first. Pix, how was your last Red Bulls game?
You know, it doesn't really matter how well it went for me. I have to say, I took my mom out there. She had a blast.
Dancing on his grave right now. Oh my God.
It was Mother's Day one day after. Took my mom out, saw a couple goals, had a good day. I will say one of the big things that I was really happy about as a Red Bulls fan was that it was one of the most packed that I've seen Red Bull Arena in a long
time.
It is the galaxy effect.
What was the final score just for scientific purposes?
It was 7-0.
Oh wow.
You got a prop ready. Oh my God. What the heck?
I didn't know he was a physical comedy guy.
Yeah, well, I know it's freaking
terror. I tried to warn you guys to open it. I said I'd do a little bit of acting.
It was like Gallagher, he's gonna be smashing watermelons in a second.
But yeah, overall, I was super happy. The biggest thing was that there was so many fans out there, and that's kind of what I want to see out of, you know, the Red Bulls. Is just, and obviously we haven't. We just lost two games on the road after, you know, winning 7-0. So good. I'm still not happy with the product, but I think just, you know, getting out there, seeing all those fans out there, that's exactly what, you know, you want out of the MLS. Happy fans leaving the
arena. Altruistic. It's all about the fan experience. All right, dude. 7-0. His team just dogs us, and he's talking about the
game. He wasn't even going to say the final score.
He wanted to.
I know he did.
He's passive aggressive like a squirrel. He knows what he's
doing. He is. Yeah. All right. This guy's got cats. We have a lot of squirrel energy.
All right. Well, Pix had a great experience. Biz, it's up there as well. He did keep his ticket. I don't know why I spun this narrative like he was going to get rid of it. I don't know. It just kind of got him. I got taken over by it. But he went to the Minnesota Inter-Miami game, and he got to see the whole gang. How was that?
I did. It was pretty surreal, man. Me and my brother, I think, just kind of sitting there taking it all in that first like 5 to 10 minutes. We did the day out on the town beforehand. So went to, you know, did lunch and hit the pub beforehand and did the walk up, and you just see the amount of like the gravity of like what a game like that, even just in Minnesota, where there is some soccer tradition here. But I mean, if we're being critical, you know, in comparison to like a lot of European countries, I mean, we're not having, there's not the fervor that you would have, you know, in like in a Spain where people are like, sure, you know, falling all over themselves trying to like even just get a glimpse of them. It's not the same, but even just like what he provides just being there. Longest line I've ever seen going into Allianz Field, going into Hartside. You could tell there was tons of people that had never been there before that just wanted to, you know, just try to get into the game in some capacity. When we got up, Allianz on our side were kind of like the street side entrance, and it had literally wrapped all the way through the long walkway sidewalk, and then all the way down like on the horizontal part on the actual street side of the sidewalk. It was as packed as I can ever remember seeing it, like probably 4 or 5 times the normal traffic that we had. So awesome. that was pretty cool and pretty crazy to see. The game itself, I mean, it went really positively too. Inter Miami is not playing well right now. I think you can see the disdain on Messi's face with just about everything that's going on. But I mean, man, if you could write it in a book on what I was hoping and expecting to get out of that game, we won the game 4-1. Messi scored, so I got to see a live Messi goal, which is something that I will tell my kids about. Like, that is like so incredibly cool to me that I got to see like the best person to ever play the game get to see a live goal in an actual competitive fixture. I never thought I could say that, so that was really, really a cool thing, and it's exactly why I bought those tickets. You know, we had talked about obviously like hypothetically selling those tickets, but with the intention of buying other cheaper ones. I'm so glad that we didn't. and that the price kind of twisted our arm, because I think a lot of people panicked towards the tail end, and there was still, like, it was ambiguous that he was even there up until probably about 24 hours before, and then at that point I think people were just like, had either just decided like, screw it, we're going, or just like just the market never really bounced back from it. And me and my brother kind of made a handshake deal where we're like, if it gets over like 1,000, we'd be stupid not to, and then just like go buy them somewhere else, because it's like, I mean, if you're gonna pay for your season tickets, then you should do it. but they were in the couple $100 range, and I'm just like, dude, it's not worth it for me to not see them. Like, that's would just be silly. So happy that we hung out and stuck to our tickets. And yeah, man, I used to watch that team literally play on a, like, with a track and field track around there with food trucks all over the place, and I'd go and grab food while I'm watching, like, just, you know, semi-pro soccer players running around like a suburb. And now we're playing games where Messi's scoring in a live game that I'm watching. Crazy what the MLS has come to, and just like where this club has come to. It's among, like, just out of my wildest dreams. It's super awesome.
Yeah, that's super cool that you got to see him and get a victory as well. It's, you know, you get the best of both world. So two great games that Pix and Biz were able to go to. I still got some Club World Cup on my radar, and we're going to be talking about that in just one second. But I do want to do some quick hitters on U.S. players abroad. One thing that I really wanted to say is Matt Turner and Chris Richards, the second and third ever U.S. Nationality players to win the FA Cup, only behind Tim Howard for Manchester United in 2004. If I remember incorrectly when I read that. Turner played 3 games in the FA Cup after getting benched, and we had a whole conversation about that in previous episodes. But Chris Richards played in the last 6 FA Cup games, if I'm not mistaken. And during his games, obviously it's not all just on him, but they only conceded 1 goal in that FA Cup.
He was awesome in the final, too. I watched the whole final. He was great.
He helped it with that move that began in the goal. It was his He kind of won the ball, helped win the ball back. So, and you know, Pix, you're happy with that. Munoz with the goal contribution there. But that was really awesome to see. It's really cool to see the U.S. players thriving in Europe, even though the U.S. men's national team has been struggling. I still think it feels like the range of players that we have all over the world. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong because I haven't, you know, been around for all the generations of, you know, the times that we've seen it. But I feel like there's a lot of players achieving at the same time, more so than I've seen in the in the history of the U.S. men's national team. You know, a group of PSV players winning the Eredivisie again has been really cool to see. You know, players, you know, the Juventus players doing well, the AC Milan players doing well, a great number of players playing in the championship and doing well. Brendan Aaronson, a key piece in helping Leeds going up. So there's a lot of really, really solid players playing in Europe, and I think we're only going to see it continue. And one other bit that I wanted to add, PSV continues its American transfer policy with a 16-year-old Will Ostrander from the San Jose Earthquakes Academy joining PSV. So they're continuing to grab players. They already have Serginho Dest, Malik Tillman, Richie Ledesma, who actually was pretty solid this year in a lot of playing time due to Dest's injury, and Ricardo Pepi. And now Will Ostrander joins him as well. I know I threw a lot out there, but do you guys have any thoughts on how the U.S. team, how the U.S. players abroad have been doing this season as kind of a lot of the European seasons are wrapping up here?
Yeah, I'll comment a little bit on Palace just because I watched that, and I've been watching a lot of Palace. I think that one of the big things, not so much for Turner because he's not getting as much game time, but for Richards especially, is the way that Palace play is that they don't really, I mean, besides like Eze, like they don't really have someone who's, you know, 100% of the focus in anything. I feel like they play so well as a team.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that Richards and obviously Turner as well, with, you know, him having been in the team, can bring to the USMNT of, you know, we need to play as a team instead of playing as individuals, where a lot of the times I'm watching the USMNT and it doesn't seem that there's as much team play. And we're even going to get into, I'm alluding to it a little bit, but, you know, I think that it really is necessary to cement a style and an identity from an early on from a team perspective before even getting into, you know, you could be amazing as an individual, but if you're not playing as a team, then, you know, what's the point? And especially, you know, in a home World Cup. So I think Richards bringing in that winning mentality, but also the winning mentality that came through not individual performances as much, but team performances. I think that that'll be really paramount to the mentality of, you know, the USMNT camp moving forward.
I would like to add to that point too, is that Crystal Palace winning the FA Cup gets them into Europa League next year. And obviously we just saw today Tottenham and Man United playing in the final, and both those teams finished below Crystal Palace in the Premier League. We can only assume that Palace will have a stronger roster going into Europe next year. Obviously, they are a team that likes to turn and burn their roster in regards to being okay letting players go for profit, but, you know, allowing players to come through the academy or younger players to, you know, take those places. So I am curious to see how they do and how a full, like a fully tooled up Palace team in Europe does. I think that's very exciting to see teams like that play. And it's exciting for us because hopefully, you know, Chris Richards will continue to be a key contributor. I don't see Matt Turner being on that team next year, to be honest. So, yeah, that's exciting on my end. That's kind of the things that I love most about football. Biz, anything to add before we talk a little bit about some Gold Cup roster leaks?
I guess I can kind of transition it naturally in, because I would probably link what I would say with Gold Cup, specifically that Richie Ledesma was – added to the 60-man – well, not added, was part of the 60-man provisional Gold Cup roster, which I know that from the sounds of it, Mexico had been kind of sniffing around him. And there was another player, too, that I forget off the top of my head that was also linked. But I thought that was interesting that he was kind of added with that being kind of put out there. So I think that, there's a couple names on here, too, that we'll highlight as we go through it, because I have the full list up here too. But I think Ledesma was an interesting one, just from like kind of a dual national option. I think a couple other pieces just from like the abroad side of things. You have Diego Cochin on the provisional again. Love as that. Well. I think that is probably going to be a regular thing. And then Caleb Wiley from what was Atlanta United, now Watford, where he was on loan, right? Because
he's a Chelsea guy. Yeah.
So on loan with, and from what I understand, had a solid season with Watford, if I remember. At least I looked at it about a month ago, and it sounded like he was doing pretty well. So I don't know if that changed in the last.
He was returning from an injury too, because his first
I do remember that
cut short. Then he came back, recovered, and then went to Watford. So
So those are a couple, just kind of like cycling through the names. I have a couple of MLSers too that I'll highlight when we get into things here too. But yeah, there's some interesting ones on here, so we can kind of go through those.
Yes, sir.
Big Seb.
Big Seb. Okay, I like that. I can get behind a Big Seb train. He's our new Brian White.
No, he can't. Brian White is irreplaceable.
Oh, come on, man. Berhalter can be our new Luna.
Diego Luna is probably on his way to Europe here in the summer, from what all things considered. So, I mean, just kind of going through the list too, like a couple players to highlight if we're going down the actual MLS train of the Gold Cup angle of it. Sebastian Berhalter, it's deserved. I think like that guy has been probably one of the best center, if not the best center midfield that's American in MLS right now. It's like he's been unbelievable. I watched him live just absolutely dismantle us in about 35 minutes, which not a lot of teams have done this year to my Minnesota United squad. So that dude is locked in right now. It's pretty impressive. And then right below him on the line too, I thought was also really interesting, because there's another dual national that's MLS one. Tristan Blackman has been playing out of his mind this year for Vancouver as well, and has been a key contributor to Vancouver's really good start. I know Jesse Marsh was actually asking him if he would be interested in coming and joining Canada. So I thought it was interesting that he was also on the list as well. So there's a couple names on here that I do think are definitely interesting. One that we missed for the European connection too, Damian Downs,
that's his first look.
That I know people are saying that he is probably going to be included on the actual Gold Cup roster too. So from early reports. And then MLS player that people need to know, Alex Freeman for Orlando City, is a right back that is playing out of his mind this year. I've been seeing a lot of like highlight tape. And I think Orlando City is just one of those teams that I think a lot of people with their style of play won't click on to all the time. I think Pix would probably roll his eyes at that with Luis Muriel being on the team. But having watched it, I think just a casual fan probably would not, that would not be, like, from a watchability standpoint, one of the first teams that people would boot up on MLS season pass by any means. But Alex Freeman is having, all things considered, from what I'm reading, what I'm seeing, and I have not even gotten to watch him play, but everyone's saying that that is, like, that is the guy that is kind of in his younger 20s that's, like, kind of the next one that's going to pop off here from the sounds of it. So keep an eye on that name as well. That's the one that everyone's highlighting for a big, hopefully a big gold cup if he actually does get called in.
I'll shout one more out before we move on. Brian Gutierrez, the Chicago Fire attacking midfielder. I don't know how valid these rumors are, but I will spread them. Linked to Roma possibly in the summer, which would be electric. I've been on the Gutierrez hype train for a while just because of Football Manager, great. But he is a sick player. Yeah. So I'm hoping he goes up. It's always fun to see this because it kind of just – you get into the mind of, like, maybe the young players that people are – you know, the Federation is keeping an eye on, maybe wants to watch out for the future. It definitely feels like a roster that doesn't have a ton of those, like, kind of just throw-in players. Like, you know, no disrespect, but, like, the Shaq Moores, like, he's there, but there's not, like, a ton of guys like that. It feels like we picked a lot of youngsters who, honestly, there's, like, a fair chance of them making the roster, and, like, there's good battles there. So I'm very excited for it.
I was going to just add to that, too. I mean, you can actually see that Poch is, like, scouting MLS. Like, he's actually watching it. Because the names that are on here are, like, these are deserved players that should be here, in my opinion. And I feel like sometimes – that was the thing I think that frustrated me the most about, like, Berhalter's tenure more than anything was the fact that he just had, like, his ride-or-die MLS guys that, like, regardless of if they were playing good or not, were just there. Like, and it was more just based on, like, system fit, which I think – If you're running a system in a national team, you just have no business being a national team coach. Like, there's a tactical ideology that can be there to a degree if, like, kind of a way you want to play. But your job, you only have a finite pool. You can only plug in so many players. Like, you have to kind of mold your tactics more so than ever in a national team based on, you know, what you have at your disposal. I think that's what makes it so interesting. And just kind of the opposition of that, of, like, him now going to a club team and being able to actually, like, handpick players that he thinks fits into the style of play. That's a completely different animal. It's a different thing. And it's why both are so interesting and why I actually really enjoy national team soccer even more so, if we're just having a quick convo about that, solely for the fact that I do think that the tactical battles that take place in the style of play is really interesting, because sometimes you do have players that are kind of almost like in makeshift positions or things that, like, don't make a ton of sense, or, like, guys that are playing, like, you know, a random right wing that, like, has to play striker because they don't have a national team striker that's good enough or as good as he is, and they need goals. It's like, it's things like that that just are really unique and interesting that are kind of unlike anything that you would see at the club level. So yeah, I think that is really fun. So Poch is doing the thing, man. He, like, I think it's really cool to see that there's really deserving MLS players in there that are, and I think that's good for our league too, because that shows that, like, there's going to be growth in the league if the national team is a genuine feeder from the league. And I think that's something that we have been lacking, maybe with, like, the last two coaches, maybe like even prior to Berhalter. I think Berhalter, like, if he was sitting in the room with us right now, we would probably try to, you know, kind of clap back at that a little bit, but I would just argue that there was just, like, no room unless somebody was playing absolutely out of their minds and he was being, like, poked by the FA, like, you know, the US Federation, and say, like, you have to bring him in. Like, what are you doing? He's playing too good. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how many of those players actually make the full roster when it comes out, because I would be curious, and I'm hoping quite a few do. I know Luna will be there. He's got big balls, according to Pod.
All right, before we move on, I would like to just throw a few special shout-outs to our friends in the North. Very heavily rumored, now that Jonathan David is leaving Lille in the summer, there's an interesting rumor that Promise David, the other Canadian striker currently on a heater in Berlin, could be his replacement amongst a number of other teams that are interested in the big Canadians' talents. And then I will show out a special CPL shout-out on this preliminary roster. I did not know this guy was playing in Belgium now. Kwasi Poku, the athletic wingback, formerly of Forge, playing in Belgium now, makes the roster as well. So things you just love to see. I feel like Canada, you know, obviously the CPL is much smaller than the MLS, but just kind of the way that players come up and their journey to Europe, it's just so similar to the U.S. Yeah. So it's always a fun parallel to kind of play, especially now with Jesse March being the coach. There's just so much story to be told there. But that'll wrap up our Gold Cup. Well, no, I think we should probably We might have to finish. Hold on. I'll cut it here. But do we want to talk about Club World Cup stuff? Because it's kind of like we probably have like 10 more minutes to talk about stuff. Or do we want to talk about the Pulisic stuff?
We would... Do we want to bring our watch parties back officially for that? What does your guys' schedule look like for the 31st and the 1st? Because we have a Champions League, like the CONCACAF Champions League final is one of those days, and then we would have the Club World Cup calendar.
That's just next week, right? I could do that.
It's the 30th, 31st.
Yeah.
Or 31st, 1st. 31st, 1st.
Oh, yeah, dude, I keep thinking, like, I'm going to be out of town that weekend, but I'm leaving out of town the next weekend, so I'm pretty sure I could do... Oh, because Champions League's the 31st, right?
Yeah, we could do either day. I really don't care. I think the Club World Cup one would be... They honestly would both be fun.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's completely up to you guys what you want to do with it.
I'm down for that. But I'd probably say... I just don't feel like a lot of people are going to do, like, want to watch parties for the Champions League, because I feel like people kind of just, like, do their own thing during that. It's like, I don't know. I feel like with the big events, people will go to like
bigger. If we're going to feature, yeah, if we're going to feature Club World Cup pretty heavily on this, we should do
that. Yeah, we should, because we're riding Vancouver so
and
hard.
It will be, I would assume that's going to be pretty easily, because aren't all of them free? Like literally all of that. Like, isn't that like going to be the big thing?
I think it is.
You have to go through like a stupid ass like app that bought it, but it's like they're all going to be free.
Oh, nice.
Like every single one. So, which is big for like what we're trying to kind of do. So like, I think that does make sense. So if we're doing that, then yeah, we should talk about it and then just say that's going to be like our next featured watch party. We're bringing them back, which would be the first. That is, let me double check. That is the first, I think.
No, it doesn't start till the 14th.
No, I'm talking the playing game specifically. Is what we'd be doing
The watch party. Is the Club World Cup playing game the same day as the CONCACAF Champions?
They're like back to back days. It's like one's the 31st and one's the
31st. Because the first is the CONCACAF one.
I think so. I'm double checking.
Okay. Yeah, we could do either. Yeah, I'm down for to do both. They both sound fun.
May 31st is the world plan. So that's May 31st, Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. So it'd be late. Yeah, so it's super late.
I'm down to do it, though. Like, that's...
Okay, we could do that or what is the Champions League for CONCACAF? When is that?
Champions League Sunday at 9 p.m. EST.
EST, okay. So that'd be 8. So I'll leave it. I'm down if you guys want to do that.
What are the options again?
Because me and Adam are watching that for sure. So I could even just like fuck it. He can even come over. I don't even care.
The play-in game?
The play-in game is the 31st. So it'd be what is that, Saturday?
And then what time is that?
That is like, what did I say, Dill? 7:30 Pacific?
Yes.
So
yeah, I mean, I could do either. It doesn't matter. Whatever you guys think is more interesting, I could make myself.
You guys cool with burning a Saturday?
Yeah. I should be good with that.
All right. I'm down to, I think mainly too, because, I mean, it's Memorial Day weekend this weekend. So, like, that works. I'm down. That sounds like a good time. And then we can kind of hype that up here as we're heading out. And then
plus, I'm going to be rooting for Cruz Azul for that one, so it's going to be interesting.
You're talking for the Club World Cup play in your?
No, for the Champions.
For the Champions League itself. Yeah. Because we'd be doing. Do we want to do both, or we just want to do?
Sorry. I'm getting the dates confused.
We all are. That's why I'm making sure we're on the same page.
You mean that? What's the game?
Saturday the 31st is the Club World Cup.
America versus LAFC, right?
Yep, correct.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah,
and that would be LAFC there for sure.
That would be 9:30 Central, so it'd be 10:30 for you, pick so long as that's cool.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, all I'm right. down. Is it the Saturday one?
Saturday one, yep, so the 31st at 7:30 Pacific.
Okay, cool. Yeah, all right, let's talk about that. Let's try and be quick on this end. What do you want to talk about? Or do you just want to talk about?
We don't even need to feature it, because let's save all of the tidbits then for the opening of the, because we'll go 30 minutes early and we can just do the opening for the watch party. We'll say all the little tidbits we're going to talk about. So let's just say like we're going to do a watch party, Club World Cup, 7:30. This is when 31st, we're bringing them back. And we'll just do that.
Cool.
All right, let's do it. All right, I'll do that and then we can wrap it up. All right, guys, before we wrap up today's episode in the grab bag, we are announcing the return to the watch parties, and it is going to be the Club World Cup play-in game on June...
Nope.
No.
May 31st.
I already messed it up. On May 31st.
Off camera, we talked about it for a good 20 minutes.
I looked at the 5 in the bottom right of my calendar, and I was like, June.
I don't think any of us actually know when this game is anymore.
On May 31st, 7:30 p.m. Pacific time, so our European audience, you are cooked if you want to watch that with us. But you know, feel free to. But we are excited for that. We will talk about everything Club World Cup in terms of, you know, what to expect from the MLS teams, what to expect in the tournament, the special transfer window they're introducing for this competition, and, you know, all the teams are allowed to partake in. But, Biz, do you want to add anything about this return to the watch parties?
Yeah, honestly, just excited for it. You know, we've talked about just kind of trying to find some better options. I feel like MLS kind of took the wind out of our sails by taking away the free games this year and just doing all the MLS. It's such a bummer because that was like our whole thesis behind the idea of doing this. So this works perfectly, and I think we're really going to lean in heavily into this FIFA Club World Cup because from our understanding – unless someone else lied to us now, these are also supposed to be free for everybody to watch. You're just going to have to download some clunky app named, like, I don't know, Floopy or something like that.
Dude, you know what's funny? Like, I was literally just thinking about joke Floopy in my head.
Yeah. you're going to have to figure out some random thing that bought the rights to it. But somewhere for all of us, we'll be able to watch it together, mm-hmm. which is what we're trying to do. When we do a watch party, people aren't blockaded by paywalls and stuff. You can actually just find a thread and watch it yourself, which is the coolest part about it. So
sweet. Well, I am excited for that. Free game, hopefully. We're not promising anything, but that's what we think so far.
Some prize money on the line too for that one. That'll be a cool game. I'm excited about that. I'm excited we chose that one.
Yeah, and the teams are America versus LAFC.
Yep.
Country of America.
Full. Yep. The way Trump wants it.
There's a lot on the line.
Live on stream.
Got political. That's on me.
It's all right. We started political at the start, and we got to finish that way because that's what people come to this podcast for. But that is how we will wrap up the episode. Next watch party will be Club America versus LAFC in the play-in game, nice and late.
At BMO in LA, so that should be a fun one.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. Maybe I'll just go and ditch you guys. Just kidding. Yeah, there you go. But
our man on the sidelines.
Everyone from America showed up.
Absolute pandemonium.
I'll just be hitting Mike Breen bangs from outside. Bang, bang.
Belonga cannon, 35 out.
All right. Let's wrap it up. Guys, thank you as always to my wonderful co-host. I said incredible at the start, and you finish wonderful. Appreciate the audience, everyone who watches. We really, really do appreciate you guys. This is a fun passion project for us, and we will continue to do it bi-weekly. So other than that, this is a goodbye from us for now. We'll see you in 2 weeks, and we'll see you at the next watch party. Peace!